Struggling to keep track of your story and world? Archivos is for you. More intuitive than a wiki, more extensible than Scrivener, Archivos builds your story Bible into your personal, always-on tactical display. Graphical relationship charting, continuity tools, this thing has it all, with bonus options for fan engagement and real-time collaboration. Archivos. Story world management done right. www.archivos.digital. That's www.archivos.digital. Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of nearly 30 books, more than 30 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, coming to you from up in the crow's nest with my spyglass on this daily voyage through the dicey waters of business, craft, learning, and art in the writing life. Welcome to episode 2 of our Going Pro series, as suggested by Ed in his infinite wisdom. Definitely a series designed to tax the limits of our wisdom, which is probably a healthy thing. Last time we talked about craft. Today we're going to be talking about output. Ed prompts us with the following question.
I've heard that you can't make a living as an indie writer unless you're putting out 3 to 4 books a year. Is this true or not? And if it's true, how does one manage this, particularly in the transition to being full-time? Do you write shorter books? Do you give up on sleep so you can make NaNoWriMo look like a game for amateurs? How do you do it?
Well, I should preface this with 2 very big caveats. Firstly, asking how to make a writing with your fiction is not a question...
How to make a living with your writings?
Yeah, that's it. How to make a living with your fiction writing is currently not a question I am qualified to answer. I make a nice little income every month, but it is a nice little income every month. Basically, I made a choice because of the complications in my personal life. I made a choice back 10 years ago to just focus on craft and output because I did not have the latitude to focus on the monetization end of it very much. So we've been learning that business, and as those of you who listen regularly to this show know, the last and biggest hurdle for me personally and for us as a company, especially for my works, is marketing. I've got a few problems with this. I don't write to a single niche, so a lot of the advice out there for marketing simply isn't suitable for me, so I'm having to really feel around in the dark and find my own way. I will keep you posted as things progress, and we will be having some guests on probably early in next year who are better at marketing than I am, who are going to talk explicitly about that, because I've got a stack of questions from all of you that have come in over the last couple of years asking, when are you going to talk about marketing? So rather than just waiting until I figure it out, I'm going to bring in some other people who have different career paths and may have other ideas and some wisdom that both I and you can benefit from. Output, on the other hand, is something I know about. The second caveat is that one of the great rules of the writing business is anytime you hear someone say, the only way to make a living, you can pretty much ignore them. Or at least you need to insert a little asterisk on there. When they say the only way to make a living, what they're saying is the only way I have found to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
I personally know people who do 10 to 20 books a year and do very well. And I know people who do between 0 and 4 books a year and do very obscenely, disgustingly well. Fortunately, I also respect them deeply as humans. Otherwise, I might have to kill them out of sheer professional jealousy. And people who are all over the place in between, people who do short works, people who do a mix of short works and long works, people who only do long works, people who only do super long works and then get $1 million Kickstarters out of them, Brandon Sanderson. There's so many ways to cobble a career together with an income that there is no roadmap. The upside to that is, you're likely to discover something that works for you and nobody else if you keep at it and experiment, if you keep at it long enough and experiment in the kind of way that allows you to learn from your failures and explore idea space efficiently. The downside to that is there is no roadmap. And so we're all kind of on our own because we're all different writers and very few people are going to fit the template that takes us down a well-worn path with a fairly high degree of likelihood of success.
While it is true that there is no one road to success and one road to making a financially stable career, it is generally true that the more titles you have out and the more regularly you release titles, the more chances customers and readers have to find your work, and the more often your work triggers the algorithms on online bookstores, such as Amazon.
Which can get you preferential listing and generic
which
searches.
Which get you better listings. So it is to your advantage to produce more work and to produce on a semi-regular schedule.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that doing so guarantees you success or that you can't make a living doing one title a year.
Yeah. One of the tricks to making a living doing one title in a year is to cultivate a rabid and devoted fan base.
Yes.
And to curate your community very well. I am not good at this yet, but this is going to be the way I have to do it because I don't write in a single genre. I am currently trying to learn how to do that. But I'm not the person to look to for an example.
I'm trying to learn how to write in a single genre? Or
trying to learn how to curate and build a community.
Okay, yeah, that makes much more sense. I don't think you could stick to one genre.
I, for example, have 150 people on my mailing list, and I never send any newsletters out because I don't know what to send out. I've got a mental block around there that comes largely from growing up so poor that catalogs were entertainment in and of themselves, and I never bought anything out of a catalog. So because that form of marketing, I had to train myself very young so that it didn't work on me. I am now having to try to figure out how to train myself to understand how it could work in order that I might understand how to put useful work into it. So, anyway, we need to get on to the main question. Output. Read again what he said about output.
How do you manage this, particularly in the transition to being full-time? Do you write shorter books? Do you give up on sleep so you can make NaNoWriMo look like a game for amateurs?
Okay. There are a few ways you can do this. The first thing is to write a lot of short fiction and submit it to paying markets. The market for short fiction is not good right now. There's just not a lot of places that pay well. But if you set up a system where every week or 2 weeks you're sending a new story out and around, and then when they get rejected from the top 7 or 8 markets, you go ahead and publish them on your own and then send them to reprint markets, you'll be dangling things in the water and you will start to generate an income once you're, you know, if and when you start to sell, get editorial attention, and even if you wind up selling reprints to anthologies that only pay in royalties, so long as you can trust that the companies that you're signing with will actually pay royalties when they're owed you, unlike, say, for example, Disney, that also is a broader exposure, people discovering your voice, and that is one way that people find writers that they then seek out their longer or other short works for. Another strategy is to do short works. Not short stories, but short novels. The classic novel length in genre fiction is 30 to 70,000 words. That was the norm pre-1982, 1983, when the printing prices changed and the publishers started pressuring their writers to write thicker books. Before that, it was common to have novels that were as short as 40,000 words, usually 40,000 words. If it was shorter than that, they would often stack them in 2 30,000-word increments. Mm-hmm. Though I've been known to release 20,000-word novels if they just stand alone really well. And oddly, they kind of do okay for me, at least relative to the rest of my catalog. Another way to do it is to as you say, treat NaNoWriMo or some version of NaNoWriMo as not a month-long challenge, but a perpetual obligation. Now, you've told me something about the number of hours that you work, and so for you, you might not be able to, say, hit a set word count every day, but you could probably carve out 1 hour a day to write. And as you get better, that 1 hour a day will begin to regularly net you between 500 and 1,500 words on most days. If you're doing shorter novels, that does put you up in the territory. Actually, no, that puts you in three-novel territory of fairly long novels really quickly. So that puts you in three-novel territory of fairly long novels. And if you factor in sick days and days when you're just not feeling it and you can't get more than a few words out, you'd still reliably get 2 long novels or 4 short novels out of that. So if you're trying hard to negotiate the transition, that kind of an achievable schedule so that you build up your backlist is probably not a bad idea. The other thing is, if you are very good, or you become very good at curating and building a community around your work, you will move into the territory where you can pre-sell your books with Kickstarter. Brandon Sanderson, like I mentioned, just did $1 million for his next book. Pre-sales on Kickstarter. But a lot of smaller writers are doing this too, and they're getting $500, $1,000 up front. That's helping them defray all the publishing costs, because frequently it's very unusual to have the kind of setup we have where we've got everything we need to do the publishing process in-house.
Mm-hmm.
But you can at least use that to defray publishing and get some early reviews that might help goose sales and whatnot. Another thing that people who write in a fairly narrow niche, and I mean any fairly narrow niche, seem to do well at, that doesn't work for me because I don't, is taking everything into KDP Select, because then you get the readers who are just hungry for anything. And if you get a series in there, they burn through that stuff really fast. So that's another way you can do it. From the people I know who do very well with KDP Select, the things that seem to be important are very, very good narrow niche genre targeting. Not just romance, but particular kind of romance. Not just science fiction, but MIL-SF or Galactic Empire science fiction or whatnot. Well targeted with the copy and the keywords and the covers and everything. And when you hit one of those genres where people are just hungry for that flavor of fiction, that's when KDP Select seems to do very well. Now, of course, the downside of that is you are completely at Amazon's mercy, at least for the first little while. But if you're good at capturing your readers and turning them into newsletter subscribers, you can start to do other things. Like, for example, before you go to KDP Select, you do pre-sales to your newsletter. You can hold other events and contests to gin up excitement and support. You can start, as your list grows, you can start rotating things out of KDP Select once they tail off and they're not getting page reads anymore. You can rotate those out to the wide market and do a secondary marketing push out wide. All of this is much, much easier if you're in a narrow genre niche. If you're like me, and you're what Christine Catherine Rush calls a voice author, where you're all over the place genre-wise, you're all over the conceptual map, you're writing fiction and nonfiction, and, I write fiction, nonfiction, horror, mystery, thriller, hard science fiction, gonzo comedic adventure, and science fiction political thrillers, so far, as well as nonfiction in what is about to become 3 different areas instead of just the one area of writerly resources. I'm about to publish a book that is both a writerly resource and literary scholarship, and then later in the year I have a book on education that's coming out. So I'm spread so damn thin it ain't even funny. People come back to my fiction because they fall in love with the way that I tell a story, the way that I use language, or the way that I think about things, rather than the tropes that I'm employing. If you're employing reliable tropes, then you're going to get people who want those tropes, and if you're good at it, you'll be able to hang on to them, and you may be able to convert them out to more experimental stuff, as Gail Carriger has done.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're coming at it the way I do, you're coming at it the hard way, and it's going to take a long time, unless you're much better at the things I'm weak at than I am, which I wouldn't put past you because you're a very smart guy. Kitty, what other tips would you have for output and trying to get a groove on, either that you've seen from me or that you've experienced from you or from any of the other writers that we know?
Either go with a consistent schedule, like a certain time of day for an hour or half an hour or whatever time you have available, or write any time you have a spare moment. We've known several writers who have completed novels by writing during stolen snatches of time, and you can get started that way. Whatever works for you and for the time you have available to dedicate to your writing.
One thing that can help, now that you say that, is if you have very limited keyboard time available, but you commute in a car,
mm-hmm.
or do other things that, you have chores that take you out of the house, take you on a walk to your lunch break, anything like that, you can dictate notes to yourself. And even if you don't go back and look at them, talking things out can help you structure your thoughts about what you want to write next so that when you sit down, it comes easier.
Mm-hmm.
And faster.
And you can dictate the whole story.
Yeah, if you want to get into that.
If you want to do that.
But, God, I hope this was helpful. This is not as structured as I was hoping that it was and that the other episodes we've recorded so far in this series are.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I think it's because the second half of the question, at least, is something that we have talked about. So we're trying to find something new in this area.
I think maybe we did that, or at least I hope we've at least distilled things down in a fashion that's accessible mm-hmm. in a way that previous episodes on this topic weren't. If you have any follow-ups, Ed, or anyone else, please send them in, because it's a really good topic, and it's an important one, and I'd like to do it justice if we haven't here. We were interrupted mid-recording session by the batteries running out, so we did lose our train of thought at one point. So, hopefully that does the trick. And, if not, we trust you'll let us know.
And we'll see you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written by J. Daniel Sawyer and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and Kitty Nakian, and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2019 J. Daniel Sawyer, and the production is copyright 2019 Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners. Join the conversation. Submit a question, leave a comment, or a creative death threat. Or find me at jdsawyeronminds.com or hit me at feedback@jdsawyer.net. We can't do it without you.